Welcome to What is Going Om for New Thought from the Edge of Om. Each week on Om Time's flagship radio show, veteran broadcaster, author, and media consultant Sandy Sedgebeer conducts thought-provoking interviews with inspirational authors, artists, musicians, scientists, speakers, and filmmakers who are working at the point where spirituality and science meet consciousness at the very edge of Om. Here is your host, Sandy Sedgebeer.
Hello. The answer to all our problems, indeed all the world's problems, lies within us. How many times have we heard that? How many times have we been told that we all have the power to transform our life and fulfill any dream we can conceive of? How many books have been written to reinforce those messages? And how many true life stories do we need to hear to believe that the key to changing our life is to change our consciousness? Glenn Harold is a multi-million selling self-help author of 7 books and a clinical hypnotherapist whose hypnosis and meditation CDs, MP3s and apps have sold over 7 million copies worldwide. A remarkable achievement by any standards. But what's truly inspiring about Glenn Harold's story is how he transformed himself from a kid who preferred sleeping on the streets at 12 to being at home with a dysfunctional family and running foul of the law and experiencing a major health scare at 17 due to excessive drugs and alcohol, to becoming a non-smoking, vegetarian, consciousness-studying, fitness fanatic who not only used self-hypnosis and meditation to transform his life and achieve all his goals, but has also made many thousands of people around the world find the same. Glenn Harold, welcome.
Hello, Sandy, and thank you for that lovely intro.
Glenn, you're living proof that no matter how bad our circumstances, we all have the power to change our life. You know, what I didn't say in the intro there was some of the things that happened to you, from getting expelled from school to being in trouble with the law, etc. I mean, your life from the ages of 12, probably into your 20s, were really not very good at all. So how did you turn that around?
Well, it was a long journey. It was, you know, a very, you know, difficult childhood, and I had a lot of negative conditioning that came from that, because, you know, I was kicked out of school when I was 15. All of these things, you know, because I was a troubled kid. You know, I came from a very dysfunctional household. And so I mixed with a very sort of wild crowd, you know, it was drink, drugs, lots of gang fights and all that kind of thing. And so, you know, I was hanging out with kids who had the similar sort of vibrational energy as I did at that time, you know, very lost, no parental guidance, you know, just sort of street kids. And so I, you know, when I later on, when I got into my adult life, you know, unsurprisingly, I failed to set the world on fire in my sort of late teens and early 20s. And I struggled to hold down jobs. Relationships were always very brief. And the crux of it was because I had all of this negative programming and conditioning from my childhood. So, you know, in adult life, I was still carrying that with me. And, you know, I had a lot of ambition in me. You know, I never lacked ambition, but, you know, unfortunately as a kid, I channeled it in the wrong way, because that was all I knew how to. But as I got older and I started to, you know, I got into music in my late teens, which was a bit of a salvation, and I played in a number of bands and had a little bit of success in the early 80s in a band called the Sugar Ray Five. We won a national pop competition, and for the first time in my life, that took me away from sort of hanging around on the streets and gave me a really positive focus. So from that sort of tiny start, you know, that little flash of success, I, you know, started to move in a different direction. And as I got into my 20s, I played in a number of covers bands, and, you know, because that was really the only way I could make a living back then. And it was one time when we were sharing the bill with a stage hypnotist that I had a real epiphany, because I saw this guy using hypnosis for entertainment, you know, to do the kind of things stage hypnotists do, make people do crazy things for the entertainment value. And it really sparked something in me. I had this epiphany where I saw this powerful tool that I was drawn to it for the healing potential of it. I didn't want to do the entertainment thing. And so from that moment, you know, I had that epiphany, and I then found a course in London, which was one of the biggest and best courses of the day, and I did a two-year diploma in clinical hypnotherapy, because I realized within that, I saw something there that I could heal a lot of the dysfunction that was in me, you know, using self-hypnosis, working with other hypnotherapists. And really that's what I did, and that's what turned the corner for me and got me out of you know, the sort of failure programming that I'd had running for so long. And I kind of, you know, slowly and surely I stopped smoking. I, you know, cut right, well, I'm, you know, today I'm completely teetotal. You know, and slowly over time I became vegetarian, vegan, you know, now I'm into raw food. And, you know, it was a complete and utter transformation. And that was the crux of it, you know, doing that hypnotherapy course and realizing that I could change this negative programming and turn the corner. And it didn't happen overnight. You know, I still had a lot of issues back then, but, you know, little by little I worked on them and started to raise my energy, you know, my consciousness, and
when you were,
clear a lot of that dysfunction. Sorry, Sandy.
When you said that you had a lot of ambition as a kid, but did you have any belief that you stood any chance of achieving those ambitions?
I think my conditioning was so bad that I didn't really. I wanted it. I wanted to be successful. I wanted to be happy. I wanted to, but I didn't know how to get that because I'd never seen it. You know, my family life was so dysfunctional and violent, but I didn't know how to get that. So when you grow up in a household like that, it's all you know. You know, you just know what you've grown up in, and it's normal to you. You know, if you're, you know, you grow up in a crazy, violent household. I mean, I had my best friend who lived over the road, he lived in a very normal household, what you call normal, you know, very happy environment. And he would say that when he came to my house, it was like a Tom and Jerry cartoon. He said that years later. He said it was so chaotic and crazy. And, you know, it was weird. When I went over to his house, I actually felt uncomfortable in a normal environment like that because all I'd known was chaos.
Yes.
So I didn't know how to get out of that. That was the thing, you know. It was only later on through hypnosis that I started to build my confidence and rebuild myself from the inside out, that I suddenly did start to realize later on that I could have a happy life. But I didn't know that when I was younger.
So winning the competition and, you know, having a little bit of celebrity in the music industry, did that give you a clue that there was a different life out there that you could possibly attain? Or did you feel, well, I've just lucked into this and it's probably not going to last?
I felt that, exactly that. You know, I lucked into it. I was, at the time, you know, we had a very, very talented singer who, you know, could have been a real big star. But we had a good band dynamic. And so really I wasn't the protagonist. I wasn't the main character in the band. I was, you know, a bit part player in that, you know, and I did a good job. I was a good bass player, but I was so insecure then. And even when we used to do interviews, we do radio interviews and TV interviews, and I was so insecure at that time that I couldn't actually speak in interviews, and the rest of the band would kind of take the mickey out of me because all I'd say is hello and goodbye, and I'd sort of blend into the background. And I never, at the time, I didn't understand why I was like that. But it was all the conditioning from my childhood, just knocked my self-esteem to six. And so I couldn't actually speak. And any success we had, I just put it down to the others. You know, and so it took a long time after that for me to get out of that. But that was where I was at back then.
So once you started self-hypnosis, you know, I mean, your path since then, and we can talk about energy because you talk about that chaos in your house and the, you know, the calm and peace which was uncomfortable for you in your friend's house. And looking back from where you are now, you know, I'm sure you see that as vibrational energy. And you were stuck in a very low vibrational energy and you didn't know how. You weren't comfortable with a higher vibrational energy. But at what point did you start to become interested in consciousness?
I think it was really when I started to understand it. Because, you know, in my younger life, I didn't understand that concept. I was just, you know, I didn't even know that I was a product of my environment. I just thought that I wasn't any good, you know. I just, even if I did good things, you know, I did good things in my life, I still had this low self-esteem from my childhood. So, you know, the concept of higher consciousness at that time was completely beyond me. And it was, but it was really when I started using hypnosis and meditation that I started to draw out my inner talents and, you know, some belief and confidence that had just been submerged and held back. And it was there that I started to change direction. You know, as I said, when I went vegetarian and then later vegan, you then start to attract different things into your life. You start to attract more positive people and, you know, your environment changes. You know, different opportunities come towards you. And so it was from that, that was the awakening point as well. You know, I started to wake up and, I mean, I think I've told this story before where I did have a bit of a spiritual epiphany.
Glenn, I'm going to hold you because that's a lovely story and I want us to hear it in one piece. You're listening to What Is Going On.
Sandy.
I'm Sandy Sedgbeer and I'm speaking with best-selling self-help author and clinical hypnotherapist Glenn Harold, whose multi-million hypnosis CDs, apps and downloads have helped thousands of people worldwide transform their lives. We'll be back with more of Glenn Harold's inspirational story after the break.
The future of internet radio is here. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Change and growth are part of natural life and also part of your spiritual life. Everyone needs support and guidance, especially during life passages. Upgrade yourself with the Om Times Experts program. With Om Times Experts, you have access to the best intuitive coaches, spiritual teachers, counselors, astrologists, and oracles. Our team was carefully selected so you can trust. Find out more at experts.omtimes.com.
More than 24 million Americans have an autoimmune disorder, and that number continues to grow. I'm Sharon Saylor, and I'm one of those 24 million. To put that number in perspective, cancer affects about 9 million and heart disease up to 22 million. That's why I've brought together top experts and those thriving regardless of their diagnosis to bring you the latest, most up-to-date information. Join me, Sharon Saylor, Friday night, 7 p.m. Eastern, for the Autoimmune Hour on Life Interrupted Radio to find out how to live your life uninterrupted.
My name is Meera Batra, and this is How I Live United. Many families have come to America for a better life. I advocate for these families with United Way. United Way empowers them to see opportunities available. We help them get involved with their kids, schools, and network within the community. My name is Meera Batra. I help families see opportunity and succeed. I don't just wear the shirt. I live it.
Give, advocate, volunteer, live united. Go to liveunited.org. Brought to you by United Way and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Glenn Harold, Paul the Apostle had his epiphany on the road to Damascus. You had yours in England on the M20 motorway in Kent, which, if anybody knows England very well, is nowhere near as glamorous. Tell us about that epiphany.
Well, it was exactly that. It was I'd been working at the time as a minicab driver in the West End. And, you know, I used to drive up to London at sort of 7 in the evening and drive home in early hours of the morning. And I was literally, I used to have some amazing conversations with people back then. I really did. It was like, and I met, so many different people from, I met royalty down to people who were working on the streets, real, every aspect of society, quite in my taxi at one time. And, I had some amazing experiences with that. But it was, and sometimes I'd meet people who would, I'd get into these really deep conversations about spirituality. And there's another story in this, which I'll tell you after this, because it shows me where I was at and where I ended up. But this one night, I was driving home about 4 a.m, and I suddenly started to get this amazing feeling of love. It was like my heart had expanded like 100 times, and I just felt this overwhelming feeling of love, and it came out of nowhere. It wasn't like I was looking for it. I wasn't, because I'm quite, even though I was doing tough jobs and I lived in tough areas, I could always deal with that kind of thing. Sleep, when you slept on the street at 12, you learn to toughen up from a young age, and so I could always handle stuff. So it wasn't like I was desperately looking for this love thing. But it came to me, one night when I was driving home, I just had this massive expansion, and I started crying, there were tears pouring down my face. And driving home, I started to get the words to a song called See the Light, and it was literally, I've seen the light, and I felt it. And it's like when you hear people talk about near-death experiences, and they see this light, and they feel this love. I'm sure what I experienced was similar to that. And I think from that moment on, that was some kind of upgrade for me, or some kind of download into my mind, this level of consciousness, this expansion. Because from that moment on, I had this hunger for knowledge and like real deep spiritual knowledge. And it was from there, I went from being the taxi driver, playing in bars and clubs, playing my guitar in bars and clubs, to then doing the hypnotherapy course and really going on a completely different trajectory in my life.
So who were your early influences in the consciousness New Thought arena?
I think, back at that time when I started, when I woke up, I found Louise Hay's You Can Heal Your Life, and that was an amazing book, as it has been for so many people. And I also really liked Stuart Wilde back then. He wrote some amazing books back in the 90s. And he was really out there. I kind of related to him because he was a British guy, and he was completely out there. He was a real free spirit, and he'd lived a very full and colourful life in London. He was a very successful businessman, and he was wild by name and wild by nature, and I loved his wisdom. He got a lot of he translated a lot of very deep spiritual Eastern wisdom into like everyday. Sometimes lad speak, and which I could really relate to at the time. So he was a big influence, and I saw him live a number of times. Later on, Eckhart Tolle was a really big influence. And I actually met Eckhart. I went out to Malibu because we were on the same app label at the time. And so I had a one-to-one meeting with him for, 20 minutes, which was great. And, he'd also slept on a park bench in Regent's Park at one time. So we were sharing these stories about sleeping on park benches, and so it was really, really nice. And he's such a cool guy. I've known, because I was on the same development team as him, I kind of knew quite a lot about him and his work, and he's a very authentic person. In the self-help world, he's one of those people that I really look up to.
One of the real deals.
So yeah, those were the big players. Yeah, he's the real deal, totally.
So You're driving this cab, you have an epiphany, you start reading everything you can get your hands on, and waking up, as many would say, and you're also studying hypnotherapy. So you became a hypnotherapist, and you used hypnotherapy to help you build your own confidence and transform some of the behavioral patterns you'd had. At what point did you think about, you're a clinical hypnotherapist, you're seeing clients. At what point did you think about, I'm going to start, recording these and giving them to other people? Mm. And did you start on your way to the success that you've got now?
Well, it was really a very organic process, because when I qualified as a hypnotherapist, I then completely immersed myself in the art of hypnotherapy, and I took to it like a duck to water. I loved helping other people. I loved working on myself and clearing out this dysfunction, these, you know, peeling layers of the onion away. And I loved, you know, doing the same for other people. You know, if somebody had a phobia or a, you know, weight issue or an anxiety problem, you know, it gave me such a buzz to be able to help that person move on from that. And I found I had a knack for it as well. You know, I think because I had a love for it and because of my background, I really enjoyed the healing aspect of it because I was healing myself at the same time. And, you know, I found I was good at healing other people. And, you know, it was a slow start. I didn't, you know, start seeing loads of clients straight away, but I was very, you know, diligent and hardworking with it. And, you know, over time, over a couple of years, I started to see more and more clients. And it got to a point where I was, you know, seeing about 30 clients at one time. And, you know, I ended up having to have a little waiting list and, you know, and that built up. And I just really loved that aspect of the work. And then, you know, one day I'd done that for about 5 years where I was seeing all these clients. And then I thought, you know, I'll record one of my sessions because I always kept a little recording set up in my house. You know, and that time I had quite a small house, and but I always had a little recording set up there. So one day I thought, I'll record one of my sessions. And so I went in the other room into my little music room and recorded straight onto a DAT machine with a bit of reverb. And I remember it was for me, you know, it was about feeling confident, feeling good in myself. And I listened back to it and I remember thinking, this actually sounds pretty good. I could maybe, you know, make these for other people. And so I literally, from that moment, it was another epiphany. And at that moment, at that time in England, there was no real market for hypnosis recordings. Nobody had actually made hypnosis recordings. The only ones in the UK were like American ones that were kind of meditation. So I decided to, you know, print some covers that said, you know, these are really strong hypnosis recordings. They're going to help you feel more confident, that kind of thing. And I literally used to drive around to local shops, you know, selling them on sale or return, £5 each. And that's how it started, you know. And, you know, I remember at the time I borrowed £1,000 off the bank to get a loan to get some nice little displays made because I was making homemade displays to put in shops. The loan was like £36 a month. And within 3 years, I had 5 girls working for me and I was turning over £500,000 or something. And even my PA at the time, she said to me, what's this money coming out of our account each month? And I said, oh, that was the loan I took out a few years ago. So we were still paying it back by the time I had, you know, it really taken off. And it was a wonderful journey. It was totally organic. I didn't plan it. I didn't have any marketing plan. I just, you know, knew I had something that I believed in that I could, you know, sell to other people. And it worked a treat.
At that point, you were using self-hypnosis on your own issues and challenges and self-confidence and different things. You weren't using it to, you know, for the law of attraction. You weren't using it to program your subconscious to attract money and success to you.
Well, when I started with the recording side of things, when it suddenly dawned on me that there was a potential business there because I was delivering them into local shops and they were selling and people were coming in saying, you know, this really helped me get to sleep, you know, it helped me to lose weight. And I was always blown away by that people would come into the shop and tell the shopkeeper that. And it was then that I realized, well, if this is happening in this little town, this could happen everywhere because people are going to respond in the same way all over the place. And again, it was another epiphany. And so that was the point I started, you know, getting into the law of attraction and working on the whole abundance thing and projecting my goals out there that I'd sell these all over the world and, you know, they'd reach many people and they'd help many people. And I really immersed myself in the law of attraction at that time because I think because I'd had so much failure in my past and so much struggle that when I found something that really worked for me and something that was aligned as well and something that I loved doing, I just immersed myself in it. And you know, my wife at the time, Ali, she said to me that when you would meditate, you would go so deep that the bed would actually vibrate. because I'd get so immersed in these meditations for abundance, and you know, and that was really the start of everything that I've, you know, achieved over the last sort of 25 years, 20 years.
So many people think that, you know, with The Secret, all they have to do is, you know, change their mindset, change a belief system, whatever it is, believe they can have something, you know, say mantras, you know, repeat affirmations, whatever it is. But it's more fundamental than that, isn't it? I mean, you must have found through working with so many people that change doesn't happen overnight. It is a process.
Mm. It really is. And I think, you know, you have to work on the inner and the outer. And there's a good, you know, hypnotherapy metaphor or analogy, I should say, that, you know, if you think of the conscious mind, that's the 10% of the iceberg above the surface. So think of an iceberg, that 10% above the surface is the conscious mind. The 90% below the surface is our unconscious mind. You know, and that's where we hold all of our conditioning from our past, our creativity, you know, our infinite creativity that we can, you know, use, you know, when we go into our unconscious mind, we can plug into that universal pool of creativity that is just there, you know, waiting for us to access it. And so, you know, for me, you know, accessing that part of my unconscious mind was the key to every kind of transformation that I've been through, you know, and every kind of, you know, from real hardship, difficulty, struggle, into abundance, happiness, love, you know, to being at a point in my life now where I'm living somewhere where I love living, you know, in a place where I feel really blessed and, you know, and having the kind of career that I could have only dreamed of like 30 years ago. And it's all come from, you know, me working with my unconscious mind and working with that programming. And I think unless you do that part of the work, you know, affirmations on their own are not going to work. You have to really work on a deeper level. And, you know, that's, I think, been my saving grace, that I've always recognized that and worked on my inner self so much.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with clinical hypnotherapist, songwriter, and best-selling author Glenn Harold, whose personal story of transformation is proof positive that any of us can use self-hypnosis to get unstuck from unhealthy patterns of behavior and transform our lives. We'll be back after the break.
The cutting edge of conscious radio, OM Times Radio, IOM FM. Being a radio host on IOM FM allows you to build your show on a rich platform with the power of the internet to fulfill your outreach goals and connect with a very specialized and global online audience, unlimited by time and distance. OM Times Radio will provide you with web relevance, a recognizable conscious brand, and with the standard of excellence that has accompanied every single OM Times endeavor. Host your show with OM Times Radio Network.
My name is Victor Furman. Some call me The Voice. I've always been fascinated with human nature, spirituality, science, and the crossroads at which they meet. Join me Wednesdays at 8 p.m. Eastern on OM Times Radio, and we'll explore these topics and so much more on Destination Unlimited.
I'm Fidel Nshombo. I was born in a city called Bukavu in the Congo.
We were a loving family. And then, boom, everything that I had disappeared in a single day.
People think that when you are a refugee and they resettle to America, and all your problems are done. They don't understand that that's the beginning of everything.
I was not born a refugee. I was made one.
It's time we welcome refugee families with open arms. Learn more at EmbraceRefugees.org, brought to you by the Ad Council.
Welcome back. So Glenn Harold, so here you are. You're gradually changing your life, creating a successful business, opening your own mind up and studying consciousness. And then you discover shamanism. What attracted you to that?
I think I was drawn to shamanism because you know, my work in hypnotherapy made me really realize the power of the unconscious mind and the levels of healing that you can achieve through that. And so I was always on this path, this healing path. You know, once I found it, I was really propelled along it. And when I kind of tuned into shamanism and started working with a shaman in South America, you know, at first I was working on a Skype session with this guy in South America as my friend recommended it. And I loved the aspect of working on energetic healing, because, you know, that's another level, you know. So the shamanic way of healing is through the luminous energy field, you know, through clearing imprints and blocks that have, you know, come from different lifetimes and, you know, can be activated at any time if you're not, if you don't clear them. So that was another level of healing that really intrigued me and fascinated me. And so, you know, I started working with the shaman, even went out to Panama, spent 4 months out there at this amazing healing retreat with my partner Nicola. And we had an amazing time. You know, we just immersed ourselves in shamanic culture and, you know, shamanic wisdom. And, you know, I loved it. I really did. And I also did a number of ayahuasca ceremonies. Back in, some in the UK, some in Spain. I've done one quite recently, and you know, they take you to another level. They give you another level of understanding and really awake, you know, propel your consciousness and your, you know, spiritual development to another level. It's like a fast track. You know, I think you've got to be ready for it, because the shamans say that the medicine calls you when you're ready. And for some people, you know, who are aware of it, they say it's not for me, you know, I'm not ready for it. But for me, when I found out about it, I was drawn to it like a moth to a flame. You know, I thought this powerful hallucinogenic plant that can, you know, help you awaken to another level and raise your consciousness and clear your shadow. It was something that I really, really was up for. And I had amazing first ayahuasca experience. Because I was so up for it, and it was such a powerful session, it really transformed my life again.
Tell us about it.
It was, I actually found out about ayahuasca from reading Sting's biography, and he talked about this journey he had down in Brazil, and it sounded incredible. You know, the whole first chapter of his autobiography is about this shamanic ayahuasca ceremony that he experienced. And as soon as I read that, I thought, I've got to do this. And I was going to go down to Peru because I couldn't, you know, there was nothing in Europe going on. And while I was planning that trip, I happened to be at a concert down in Brighton, tiny little concert in a vegan restaurant. And the guy that was performing just happened to mention that he ran ayahuasca ceremonies. And so I chatted to him after the show, got on really well with him straight away. He said that he was running a ceremony the next week. He'd spent 2 years down in Peru. He had, you know, very strong shamanic links. And the medicine that came over, the ayahuasca that came over to him, was straight from the, you know, a very good good shamanic lineage. And so I went to his place on Saturday. There was a small group of four of us. We did some ceremonial work. And he's an amazing musician, this guy. He's called Ali Calderwood. And he writes music. He used to write music for the ceremonies. And the music he writes is just incredible. It's, you know, Pink Floyd on acid. It's just mind-blowing music, and it really propels you. And the medicine that he got from Peru was so strong and so powerful that the first ayahuasca experience I had there was just incredible. I spent 3 hours in an absolute state of bliss. So after drinking the medicine, it's about an hour after it kind of kicks in, and then you journey with it throughout the night. And the first 3 hours was just in a state of bliss. You know, I visited higher dimensions, crystal palaces, amazing animal spirits. I got incredible insights and just felt this incredible experience of love. But then after 3 hours, the shadow came to me, the darker side, which happens for most people. It's the shadow energy that comes up, and you're faced with these things that are either inside you or part of your karma, part of your family lineage, and it can be quite dark. And it was, you know, I had a 3 or 4 hours of real darkness and healing. And you know, there's times when you vomit because things come up within from inside you, and you literally physically vomit them out. And so it's, you know, it was a tough journey. You know, it was very blissful at the start, but then when the shadow came, it was really tough. And, you know, there's times when I felt that I could just step out of this world and move on. You know, you feel like you're close to death, but it's a death of the ego. There's part of the ego that's dying. And yeah, it was an incredible experience. I never had anything like that again. You know, I've done a number of ceremonies since, and I did one down in Marbella just recently, about 6 months ago, and it was a big commercial setting. There was about 20 people in the room, and the medicine was quite weak, so it wasn't anything like you can experience with ayahuasca. And I think that's the danger now. It's becoming a little bit over commercialized. So I'm glad I had those really powerful experiences.
How did ayahuasca and shamanism influence your work?
I think it gave my work a new level of understanding, and I could talk about things in my hypnosis recordings that, you know, were directly as a result of my ayahuasca experiences. I made a recording soon after I came back from Panama, and after my first ayahuasca experience, called Spiritual Healing. And it was literally, it's literally a journey where you go through the forest to a waterfall, and you stand under the waterfall and you imagine the water coming down, you know, the purity of the water clearing away your imprints and blocks in your luminous energy field, and taking that energy down into the earth and transmuting it. And it was a recording I put out at the time, and since then it's kind of grown and grown, and it's on a few platforms. It's become one of my best sellers, which is quite interesting, because I was just inspired to create it because of the way I felt at the time. It wasn't for any, you know, commercial reason. But I think people are now, you know, getting hungrier for the deeper stuff.
Yes.
You know, as I have been. And that's the thing. I think there's so much need for that, you know, for that deeper clearing and that enlightenment and that raising of consciousness, that raising of our vibrations, because that's ultimately the way the world's going to change.
Yeah.
You know, once people experience life from a different level of consciousness, the world will transform.
You know, you also created one for spiritual weight loss. I would imagine that people often say to you, what does spirituality have to do with weight loss?
It was kind of an extension of the spiritual healing recording. Because I thought, you know, if people are, you know, have tried everything with their weight, and even if a hypnotherapy recording doesn't work, because it's only working on maybe the physical and the emotional reasons behind the weight issues. So I thought with a spiritual healing weight loss recording, it would take it to another level. And if there was any imprints or blocks in the person's energetic field that were causing their weight problem or leaving them stuck in a pattern of behavior that they couldn't shift, that was kind of the inspiration by that. So it's kind of working on an energetic level, clearing blocks and things that are possibly stuck in the luminous energy field. So yeah, that's a recording that's a little bit out there, but you know, it's got a sort of niche following.
It's interesting, you know, as a musician, you started your career in music, and obviously recording and your voice is fundamental to what you do now. But music has come back into your life in other ways. I mean, you started combining the ancient solfeggio frequencies with music and hypnotherapy to expand consciousness and, you know, help people heal their lives. Tell us a little bit about that.
Well, that was a series of recordings I made with Ali Calderwood, who ran the ayahuasca ceremonies at the time that I was involved with. And I became, you know, good friends with Ali, and we, you know, would speak about possibly working together, and him creating the music and me doing the meditation. because before that I'd always worked where I'd created the music. But at that point, we kind of got very inspired to make a number of recordings around the solfeggio tones. And these six tones are sacred frequencies that Gregorian monks used to chant to create certain feelings and for healing purposes. And for, as an example of that, the very first tone is 396 hertz. And that is a tone that's kind of anchored around the base chakra that is very good for healing guilt and sadness. And if you think about, you know, how big an issue guilt is for so many people, it was, you know, it was a really, really good recording. In the sense that when we made that recording, well, when we made those series of recording, I should say, we had three aspects to it. We had the solfeggio tones themselves, which are, you know, powerful, energetic, healing tones. And then the combination of Ali's music, which is mind-blowing, you know, it's a beautiful music that he actually tuned to each one of these frequencies, each of the six main frequencies. And then I did a meditation relating to the theme of each frequency. So the first one is about guilt, the second one is about relationships, the third one is about the heart, it's 528 hertz, and it's all about the heart energy. So each frequency has got a different tone that Ali created through the music, and we scripted the meditations between us, and then I recorded the vocal, and we blended the whole thing together and put out these solfeggio meditations that have been really, really popular. You know, so many people have given us some amazing feedback on them. And even one of the founders of the guy that helped to rediscover the tones, a guy called Dr. Len Horowitz, he actually emailed us and said that these recordings are spot on. You know, he heard a lot of frequency meditations, and he said most of them don't even use the same the correct frequencies, but he said they're spot on, and he even sells them on his website now. So that was a lovely endorsement.
You're listening to What Is Going On. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer, and I'm speaking with clinical hypnotherapist, songwriter, and best-selling author Glenn Harold about how transforming our consciousness can transform our lives and the role that self-hypnosis can play in facilitating that. We'll be back after the break.
Bringing a more conscious lifestyle to your world. Om Times Radio, IOM FM.
Spiritual, metaphysical, green living, psychic, alternative healing, life coaching. Do any of these or similar terms apply to your business or cause? If so, you are in a niche market with a very specific audience. Conscious Gate PR is the world's leading conscious public relations agency. With a global reach of over 4 million and growing, we offer comprehensive media campaigns to our targeted market. Learn more at ConsciousGatePR.com. Conscious marketing for conscious minds.
Hello, I'm Lisa Barry. Join me every Monday at 1 p.m. Eastern Time for Light on Living. A chance to see new, hear different, and feel more as I shine the spotlight on all the ways to lighten the load of life's challenges. Light on Living is your link to that new way you're looking for, that new understanding that will enhance your life, and that positive connection that will support your growth. So join me, and you'll gain insight and start to see things in a new way that motivates you.
If you own a gun, you have a full-time responsibility. When you aren't using it, be sure it can't get into the hands of curious children, troubled teenagers, a thief, or anyone else who might misuse it. Your family, friends, and neighbors are all counting on you. Remember, always lock it up. For more information on firearm storage safety, visit ncpc.org. This message brought to you by the National Crime Prevention Council, the Bureau of Justice Assistance, and the Ad Council.
Welcome back. Glenn Harold, the mind is a very powerful thing. You know, we've seen and heard stories. Hypnotherapy can do all kinds of things to, you know, improve one's eyesight, to even convince somebody that a feather along their arm is actually a cigarette burn and their skin will show, you know, the results of a literal cigarette burn. How easy or how difficult do you think it is to shift somebody's mindset and shift their beliefs and help them become unstuck from patterns that have been, you know, part of their psyche, if you like, since childhood?
I think it can be very easy if the person's open and willing to take that journey. If they're ready to move forward and heal the dysfunction within them, then it's easy. It really is easy because they're ready, you know, they're coming to you with open arms and, you know, really ready to move forward. You know, I have had clients before where that's not been the case, and they've come to see me because their wife has badgered them to come and see me. And I can think of a good example of that where I once saw a lady who, it wasn't a, you know, big healing thing, but they, this couple were due to fly off to Thailand on their honeymoon, but they were both absolutely petrified of flying, you know, so much to the point where they just hadn't been able to do it. And her fear had kind of come from him because he was a chronically fearful of flying. And since she'd been with him, she'd really developed this fear, you know, as he kind of passed it on to her. So she'd come to see me to get over the fear. And I worked with her, you know, a couple of sessions, two or three sessions, and I felt like it had gone really well because she'd come to me, you know, really wanting to get over it. And I felt, you know, I did some really good work with her, and I felt she was going to be okay when she, you know, came to the point where she needed to get on the plane. But then she said to me, "Do you think you could help my husband?" And I said, "Well, does he want to? You know, does he?" And she said, "Well, he doesn't really believe in hypnotherapy. You know, I think he was a builder, but somehow she managed to get him in for a session. And this gentleman sat in front of me, and I couldn't really get through to him. He was very, very closed down. You know, he was really there because his wife had sent him, and he sat there with his arms crossed, and it was like, you know, come on, then hypnotize me. But as it turned out, he turned out to be a really good hypnotic subject. And sometimes they say 20% of people are somnambulists, and they go into deep trance states, you know, fairly quickly. And this guy was probably in the top 5% of somnambulists. And after a little while of chatting to him, I think I was talking about football, he soon dropped into a really quick trance, you know, deep trance. And so that was when I was able to do my work and, you know, convince him that he was going to feel great as soon as he got on the plane, give him loads of anchors, loads of cues. And it was a good session. I knew it was a great session. He came out of it, he was a little bit gobsmacked because he couldn't believe that. He thought he'd been sitting in the chair for 5 minutes when it was 45 minutes. And so he went out a bit bewildered and, you know, went away. And 2 weeks later, I got a postcard from the lady, and she said, "We had a fantastic flight out here. You know, he actually enjoyed it. She said she couldn't believe it. He was a completely different person. You know, so all the cues and everything worked, and it worked a treat."
It's interesting, isn't it?
Well, 6 months later, I bumped into her again, and I said, "How are you getting on?" I just bumped into her in the street, in the high street that I worked at. I said, "How are you getting on?" And she said, "Well, it's funny. He's now taken up paragliding, and he's done a couple of bungee jumps." So he's gone from being chronically fearful of flying to getting up in planes and, you know, parachuting, jumping out of them as well. Yeah. And so it had worked such a treat. So sometimes you get these really amazing ones where you transform them.
It is interesting how some people do not believe in hypnotherapy and others are very afraid of it. The fact is, we are being hypnotized all the time. I mean, you know, you drive along the freeway and all the boards alongside the freeway are flashing messages at you, which your brain is taking on board. I remember when I was studying hypnotherapy in England and the election was on that Tony Blair won, and everybody thought that the Tories would win. And, you know, they were surprised. People found themselves voting for him, who said on TV, being interviewed, I never really meant to vote for him. I don't know why I did. And our tutor said to us, well, you know, everybody was the subject of, you know, being hypnotized, because all the posters were saying things like, don't hope for change, vote for change. He said, and if that's not a hypnotherapeutic suggestion, what is?
Mm. I heard years ago there was a BMW slogan that said you'll only feel safe in a BMW, which again is like, I don't think it lasted long, but it was, they put it out there for a little while.
Yeah.
So you do get them. The media kind of use it as well a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. So yes, it is very powerful. And I think we should all, you know, because we are being subjected to it all the time, it makes sense to take control and do it for yourself. You know, make sure you're taking on board the suggestions you want.
Yeah. And use it for good. Yeah. Use it for, you know, to improve the quality of life, to progress. And yeah, there's so many uses for it. And, you know, I've loved that journey of, you know, exploring it more and developing recordings that kind of take it to another level. So yeah, it's been a wonderful journey.
Now, you've been working with mindfulness a lot recently. How do you think that mindfulness differs from meditation and hypnotherapy?
I think with my mindfulness recordings, they still have a flavor of hypnosis. They still have that flavor, but mindfulness is more about being the observer of your thoughts, rather than, you know, any goal setting or programming. It's about, you know, anchoring yourself in the present moment and being the observer of your thoughts and creating a state of, you know, inner peace and you know, doing away with thought, you know, clearing away thought, so you can just kind of anchor yourself in your unconscious mind and, you know, be this observer. But with my recordings, I've made a series of 6 recordings with my good friend Russ Davey, who also is my brilliant IT man, because he was immersed in mindfulness when I kind of came around to the point where I was going to make some mindfulness recordings. Russ was so immersed in it, and he listened to so many different recordings and had so much experience with it. And he's also a musician, a very talented musician. So it was a natural progression for us to make recordings together. And Russ made the music for the recordings. We worked on the scripts together. And we made a really lovely series of 6 mindfulness meditation recordings. And we uploaded them to an app called Insight Timer, which is quite a big app, and it's got thousands of different authors on there. And within, you know, I think it was 6 months or whatever, probably maybe a little bit longer than that, but we'd had like 1 million plays on there. And, you know, I was the number one, I was actually the number one male author on there. I think I still am. It's funny that there's 3 or 4 ladies that are completely and utterly out there, you know, millions of plays on there. Really interesting that people tend to like the female voice for that subject, for mindfulness. But I was pleased to say I was the number one male on there, million recordings. And a lot of the reviews I was reading on there, we put a free mindfulness track up there, and they say, some people would say it's, you know, good recording, but it's got a flavor of hypnosis to it. So it's kind of hardwired into me. When I make a recording, it's going to have that element.
Yes.
But they're lovely recordings. You know, I'm really proud of them.
Well, as I mentioned earlier, you know, you're kind of going full circle in your career, in a sense, by, you know, bringing music more to the front. And your huge sales in self-help world have given you a great platform to launch your new songwriting career. Have you got any new songs coming out?
Well, earlier this year I released a couple of songs just as a fun project. You know, I'd had, you know, huge catalogs of songs that I'd written over the years, and one in particular called All of My Heart. I haven't actually released that yet, but whenever I play it to people, it gets some really lovely feedback. It was a song that I wrote 20 years, and I've redone it recently with a string quartet and a session singer in the States, and this guy just nailed the recording. He had a real vulnerability in his voice, and it just matched the lyrics. So that's one I'm going to release. I released a song I think it was March time this year, called The Wayfarer, which was written with my ex-wife, Ali. We wrote a song about a lady called Peace Pilgrim. And she was a beautiful soul who she walked across the States a number of times with no money in her pocket, just in the name of promoting peace and love and harmony. And she relied on the goodwill of people that she met on her journey. And it totally inspired us, this beautiful story. And she did it for years. You know, she walked a number of times across the States in her, you know, in her elderly life, and was an amazing person and really inspired a lot of people. So we wrote a song called The Wayfarer, and that's available on, it's on Spotify, it's on iTunes, Amazon, it's all over the place. And we got some lovely feedback on that. I also wrote a song called Fading Photograph, which is a big ballad, like an Adele ballad. And that's out there as well. So, yeah, I've really enjoyed that side of it. It's kind of a little side project, a fun project. You know, I'm not desperate to get to number one anymore. It's just a nice little side project, and I've enjoyed doing that when time allows.
Glenn Howard, before we close, just tell us briefly about the free hypnotherapy downloads that you offer.
So the free recordings I've got are my main app.
We're out of time. I'm sorry, Glenn. Just tell people where to go.
If they type my name into the App Store, Glenn Harold, you'll find a number of free apps on there you can download.
Thank you very much for being with us today, Glenn Harold.
You're welcome, Sandy.
And again, you can learn more about Glenn Harold's books, hypnotherapy, audios, and his apps at his website, glennharold.com, and that's two N's and two R's, and also hypnosisaudio.com, and a wealth of apps that are fabulous and beautifully produced are available. Just Google his name. I'm Sandy Sedgbeer. Thanks for joining me today, and I hope you'll join me again at the same time next week. Till then, it's goodbye from me.